Hey there, my name is Lexi, and thank you so much for joining me today for a book review. Today I am reviewing Becoming Miss Burton by Susan Burton and Carrie Lynn. So if you are interested in hearing about this book, stay tuned. Hey y'all, my name is Lexi, and today I am reviewing the book Becoming Miss Burton by Susan Burton. So a little background on why I chose to read this book is because I'm currently working for a podcast called the In and Out Podcast, and Miss Susan Burton, she was one of the guests that we interviewed last year for season 2 of the In and Out Podcast. I think her episode will be dropping sometime in February of 2024. Not exactly sure yet, but y'all be on the lookout for that. But she was one of our guests, and the host mentioned that he was reading her book, so I decided I wanted to read it too. I was gonna go out and order it, because I don't know that it's at any bookstores like a Barnes and Noble or anything like that. But I have a library card to my local library, and I was strolling around the library, and I saw this book, and I said, wow, that's a sign. Let me just go ahead and read it. And so that's how I came across this book, Becoming Miss Burton, From Prison to Recovery to Leading the Fight for Incarcerated Women. So I'm going to try to give as much of background as I can. Hopefully I don't mess it up, but I really would implore you all to read the book for yourselves. Miss Susan Burton underwent a rough childhood. It was filled with abuse, and her brothers were in and out of jail and getting into trouble. She witnessed her mother being abused, and until she was abused eventually for herself, and that caused her to go down the wrong path in a lot of ways. And so her story is, there was no safety net. There were no proper turns that she was pointed to stop making the same mistakes over and over again. And so she founded the foundation, A New Way of Life, which helped women who had been incarcerated to rebuild their lives after they are released from prison. The term is called recidivism, which is basically the rate at which people are going in and out of prison. And her goal is to decrease the recidivism rate. And the only way you can do that is if you actually improve the lives of the people who are coming out of prison, and you give them a fighting chance to be reintroduced into regular society. So that's what this book is all about. It's about her journey, her personal experiences, and what led her down the wrong path, and why she believes that is. And then it is diving into the political system, diving into the prison system, diving into the kind of laws that are kind of stacked against us. And she's explaining how she's set up certain initiatives. You know, A New Way of Life gave birth to a bunch of different initiatives and organizations that help to lobby for common sense prison laws and just stuff like that. Like, it's really an amazing read. So I haven't prepared any notes, y'all. We're just going raw and off the cuff. So I want to see. This book, copywritten 2017. I just finished this. I'm recording this Sunday, January 14th. I just finished this book yesterday, January 13th. And it's due back at the library on the 16th, on Tuesday. So I was rushing to finish, because after the second time you renew, you can't renew it anymore. Like, you got to recheck it and put it back. And I didn't want to do that. It is time for me to move on. I had been dragging my feet. But it's 281 pages, and the chapters are pretty good length in between. Like, it doesn't feel long in between chapters. So I feel like I was moving through the bookly, I feel like I was moving through the book pretty quickly. And, you know, when you're able to move through chapters quickly, it makes you feel like the reading is more enjoyable versus just getting stuck on a chapter that feels like it's taking forever. So definitely want to applaud Miss Burton for that. The chapters were super easy to get through, and the way that it's written, it sounds like conversation. So something that I really love about this book is at the start of each chapter, what is there, 39 chapters? There are 39 chapters. At the start of each chapter, she has like a little text in italics at the start of each one. So like chapter one is called Now What? And the text that she inserts is, the United States with 2.2 million people behind bars imprisons more people than any other country in the world. Since 1980, the rate of incarceration for women has risen more than 700%. The majority of these women are imprisoned for non-violent offenses. This next one, chapter two, Land of Opportunity. In Los Angeles from 1940 to 1945, the white population rose less than 20%, while the black population increased nearly 110%. Yet only 5% of the city's residential areas allowed blacks. So I really love these little excerpts that she kept including. Another one from chapter eight. Every year, 650,000 Americans are released from incarceration, a number larger than the entire population of Wyoming or Vermont. That's another one. Let's see. In large, from chapter 18, in large urban areas such as Los Angeles and San Francisco, up to half of those on parole are homeless. And just these little facts that she puts that really gives you perspective as to what's going on with the prison system and how people are treated and how they just keep getting funneled into this cycle of a prison system. This one is from chapter 24. People and their families are more likely to live in poverty and be hungry if they have been incarcerated. Just 3% of federal spending goes toward nutrition programs. The average Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefit per person is about $29.25 per week. And I'll read this last one. Chapter 27. In the United States, one in three adults has a criminal record. Though black men are six times more likely than white men to be incarcerated, over 60% of the formerly incarcerated will still be unemployed a year after release. Those who do find employment are typically in low-level jobs, earning 40% less pay than adults with no criminal background. So just a few little excerpts from the chapters, and it really just gives you insight into what is happening with the cycle of the prison system. So let me see here. There are a few places in the book that I want to highlight. This is from chapter 21, Who's Profiting from Our Pain? And let's see. Here I'd been thinking the war on drugs was really a war on black people and on poor people, I said. Now I've got to add a war on immigrants to this list. Several of Saul's family members had been incarcerated or deported or both. The region his family hailed from in Mexico was controlled by some of the most powerful drug cartels, and from the outside, it seemed like extended Mexican family was part of a vicious cycle destroying the lives of so many. But people in that part of the world aren't in the drug trade by choice, Saul described. They are poor peasants living in the mountains. What are they supposed to do? Tell the cartels they want to grow coffee beans instead of drug crops? Not everyone is allowed to make such decisions about their lives. I knew what he was talking about. The chasm between making a decision and winding up someplace. The truth was, your decisions hardly mattered if none of your options were any good to begin with. And the reason why I chose this excerpt is because, you know, looking from the outside in, there would be a lot of people who've never experienced these kinds of issues, and they will say, well, people should just make better choices. But how can you make better choices when your options are no good either? It's like how people describe the voting process in America, right? We're just voting for the lesser of two evils, but it's still two evils that you have to choose between. It's the same thing here. How can you expect people to make good choices when you give them no good options? And so that part of the book, that's page 164. That really stuck out to me. This is chapter 32, Living an Impossible Life. This is page 234. Let's see, what do we have here? "I'm here to help you make it," I reassured her. "This is the process of detoxing from prison. You've got to relearn what it means to be treated with dignity and respect. It's okay to ask for help, and people are going to be there to help." I showed her how to use the shower. It wasn't the typical lever. Instead, you pulled down on the spigot, and then I went back to my house and got her one of my coats. I drove her to the parole office, and after that, we went to the grocery store. "There's a lot of choices, a lot of colors. Don't be overwhelmed," I cautioned, knowing how jolting it could be to go from years of no choices and not be able to make a single decision to navigating a world very different from the one you left. And this is a perspective that I never even considered. Like, what this book has done for me and what I hope it'll do for you should you decide to go read it for yourself, it really has opened up my mind to a world that I did not know existed. Like, of course I know that people go to prison, but I never think about how prison affects people who have been there long term. And what this excerpt is detailing is one of the women who came home, and I think she, after not having been alone in 16 years, she was in prison for 16 years. And when she came home, she didn't know, like, she was going into a little bit of a frenzy because she didn't understand how to turn on the shower, because she had only seen one kind of shower for 16 years being in prison, right? So the Sincerely Jay, this is called Becoming Miss Burton by Susan Burton and Carrie Lynn. Let me take that thing off. This is called Becoming Miss Burton. Highly recommend this book. But there are so many instances that you just never think of, like, of how people are, like, mentally and skillfully being left behind because they're behind bars. There was another story that she told in here of, like, an older white lady who came to live at the house, but she had been locked up since, like, the 60s or 70s. And she was in jail for, like, 40, 50 years. And she came out and she's living in this group home with a bunch of black women. And she's, like, still a racist, kind of. And she's not, like, she doesn't want to, she's hard to fit in with the rest of the house because she still has these racist ideologies, even though, like, this is, like, one of the few options that would help her as a person to get back into, you know, society. But that was an example of that. Like, this lady had to unlearn ideals that she went into prison believing. And when she came out, there was also the same white lady who had been locked up for 40, 50 years, came to live in the house, and she would be hoarding the toilet paper at the house because in prison, the guards could come by and take the toilet paper whenever they want, and it would leave you without that simple luxury to wipe yourself if you had to go to the bathroom. So this older white lady was hoarding the toilet paper in the house because she was afraid that somebody was going to take it from her. And so those are experiences that Miss Burton points out in this book, and it's just things that you never would think about having an effect on someone, because someone like myself, I've been arrested before for driving without a license when I was a teenager, but I've never spent a weekend in jail or prison. I've never done a sentence, you know, and I didn't know that it affected people in this way. This is chapter 34, page 246. Okay. "But when I harped about what was possible to achieve, the women often said things like, 'But that's for people like you, Miss Burton.' 'People like you,' I corrected. 'I'm just like you.' Many of our women had post-incarceration syndrome. I'd experienced it, where I'd been so conditioned to feel shame and to believe I was a bad person who didn't deserve a better life. For a long, long time, I believed I was insignificant. Now I marched around the house telling the women over and over, 'Your life matters.' I tried to get them to see it wasn't just about landing in prison. It was a long road that had led them here. 'Did you grow up having inadequate shelter and enough food?' I asked. 'Did you always feel safe? Did you have a sense of security in your family, in your life? As you got older, did you have access to therapy, to a drug treatment program?' Rarely did I hear anyone answer yes. 'When you were a little girl, did you have swimming lessons or ballet class? Were you exposed to the arts? Encouraged to be a part of team sports? Did you have access to a tutor if you needed help in school?' Again, all no. Without exposure to things, How was someone supposed to realize her talents, strengths, and what was possible to achieve? These should not be activities reserved for people of privilege. Schools should provide these too. But in so many urban communities, classrooms were overcrowded with inadequate teaching tools and shabby materials. These schools tended to operate from a place of punishment, just like the criminal justice system. Just like y'all, like what? Post-incarceration syndrome. It's crazy, Maurice Beat says. Seems like a very organized book and a lot of facts that could help someone who has been castrated for a period of time. Right. These people have been socially castrated from society. This is chapter 35, page 258. At last, we could start making some progress. Word got out to the institutions that the Sybil Brand Commission would no longer be politely peeking around and leaving quietly. Now, as we inspected a facility, the top brass joined us. When we pointed out something that needed to be corrected, the correction was made. Plumbing was fixed, women were sent to the proper medical specialists, inmates who were eligible to vote were registered. In a juvenile detention center, I spoke with a 13-year-old boy. "Why are you here?" I asked. "Because I had bad attendance in school," he replied. "Why weren't you going to school?" "I couldn't go by myself because of the gangs." I felt a stone in the pit of my stomach. Here was a kid being punished because his neighborhood was too dangerous for him to walk to school? How was I supposed to write this up in a report that the entire situation was foul? Sure, we were making changes, but mostly spot corrections. As for systemic overhauls that could lead to a truly lasting impact, we weren't making a dent. Not a single change the commission engaged in was going to stack the odds against this kid winding up in prison one day. Sadly, through no fault of his own, he was already halfway there. Y'all. So this kid was missing attendance and they threw him in prison for not going to school without fixing the issue of why he felt he was not safe to go to school. Because on his walk to school, he would have been initiated by gang members who would be pressuring him to join a street life. Like, and it's crazy that this is how they were catching people up into the system. This is part of the prison industrial complex here in America. Maurice Beat says, "I understand what that little boy went through. I also been through that, having to fight to get your education." And it shouldn't be that hard for someone to get their education. This one, I have like two more. I'm trying to get through them. Well, three more. This is from chapter 38, page 275. This quote really stuck out to me. I just really like it. From the back of the bus to the front of the prison. We were starting on the reverse side of Montgomery and facing Selma, the destination the original protesters never made it to. So this quote stood out to me because it's like Black people went from one struggle to another. Black people, you know, no, Black people is what we're gonna stick with. But they were talking about like protests back in the civil rights era, and Dorsey Nunn on my left, Daryl Atkinson on my right, we held a sign that said, "From the back of the bus to the front of the prison." And that's just, it really sums up what this book is talking about, as far as you uncover one problem and you give it a solution, and then you uncover like 50 other problems that need solutions. So we're not nearly as far as we need to be, but we are making progress. We are making progress, but now we're seeing that there's so much that needs to be deconstructed and redone essentially in our society, so that we're not alienating people and treating people the wrong way and just throwing them in jail when really they need treatment, they need support. And then I think that's what I will end this on. There were also instances in here, right? Like one of the excerpts, that's how you say it. One of the excerpts I mentioned was how prisoners were being registered to vote. So apparently there were certain states who would lock people up, and the general rule is once you've been convicted, you lose your right to vote, right? But there are situations oftentimes where people are thrown into jail as like a holding thing, right? They haven't even been convicted. They have not been sentenced, but they are in jail awaiting trial. Technically, those people sitting in jail still have the right to vote, but because they're led to believe that any kind of arrest means that they're no longer eligible to vote, because they're made to believe that, they don't exercise their right to vote. So then the prison population becomes a place where these people are not represented. And what's like that slogan from for America, like way back in the 1700s, no taxation without representation. These people make pennies a day, and the price of their commissary, like stuff they buy in their little store in jail, it's exorbitant prices. Like there was a story in there of ramen costing like $1.50 for one pack of ramen or one cup of noodles, when you could go to the store and buy a 12 pack of noodles for $1.50. Or I'm trying to think what else was in there. That was the main example. There was something else. It was like $10. Oh, a bottle of shampoo. A little small tiny bottle in jail was $3.75. But if you go out into the real world, it's like $5, right? And so they fought to get like bigger sizes of shampoo in the jails for the women. But then the big bottles were $10 on the inside of jail. But on the outside, it's like $4 or $5, right? So these prisoners, they're working for slave pay, barely any pay, but it really is like a new form of slavery. They're not making a lot of money, and then they're charged these crazy prices on the inside for things that do not cost that much on the outside. And so imagine if you are a prisoner and you don't have the support of family or somebody on the outside putting money on your books and helping you to be able to kind of survive in prison with certain little basic necessities that you might need. And it's just crazy. So just in general, this book has really opened my eyes to a forgotten population. A lot of people will write off prisoners as having just been people who did something bad and now they deserve this punishment. They're serving their punishment. Yes, that might be true, but they're still people and they still deserve to be treated humanely and they still deserve to be invested into. There's another excerpt in here that says something along the lines of, it takes $60,000. Oh, that was another one. It's like $60,000 to house incarcerated people. That was actually one that I didn't read. So let me see. Chapter 39, page 277. Drugs are insidious, a social ill for some folks, a criminal ill for others. Just like me, Melvin had served time, but what good had that done? Taxpayers pay up to $60,000 per year to incarcerate a person. For the same fee as tuition at an elite university, I sat behind bars with no hope of a long-term plan, and I came out each time angry, demoralized, and primed to re-offend. To think what a different world we'd live in if someone like me, someone like Melvin, could have been sent down a productive path instead of to the Department of Corrections. Woo, y'all. So this book, Becoming Miss Burton, those are just a few of the excerpts, but those are some of the gut punches that you're going to hear in this book that really makes you reconsider a forgotten population of people who are incarcerated and in prison. And I would really implore y'all to read this. This is a great read. It's entertaining, but also educating. And you get to hear some amazing stories that people go through. And it's the same type of stories that we talked about on the podcast that I work for. It's called In and Out Podcast, where we have stories just like what you're going to hear in Becoming Miss Burton. And yeah, I highly recommend it. This was at my local library. If y'all go find it at your local library or go buy it, it's a great read. I don't know how much it costs, but it's great, y'all. So thank you so much for tuning in to this book review. Let me know what you think about this in the reviews or in the comments section. Make sure you like, share, subscribe. And until next time, my name is Lexi. Peace. Why you go so fast? Why you go so fast? You must got that heavy lead foot sinking on the gas. Slipping through this weather. Take your time so you can slip into some.
in this weather. Why don't you slide in?